I'm Leah.
I'm Kat.
And I'm Dina.
And today's topic is patient autonomy. Doctors have years and years of science experience, high levels of chemistry, and incredibly hard schooling. And the details of doctordom make health a very linear progression, especially treatment, when in fact, paths to holistic health include many other factors for a patient, like mental health, support groups, spirituality even, and the experience of living with the condition and any side effects of their treatment. In other words, doctors may have a scientific or biomedical perspective, but patients have the lived experience of seeking care and living with their bodies and their health condition.
Before speaking to Leah and Dina about patient autonomy, I, Kat, interviewed Dr. David Gottfried about his take on the progress and current state of patient autonomy in the medical field from a doctor's perspective. So, Dr. Gottfried, what does patient autonomy mean to you?
So I think the idea is excellent, but the question is, really, how can we change how medicine is being delivered?
As a healthcare provider, can you identify any areas for growth regarding patient autonomy?
I don't always think that we, when we walk into the room to see the patient the first time, spend enough time listening. And I don't think that when we explain something, we necessarily have an idea whether the patient understood it. And so there may be some training. And one thing I know that at the hospital I'm at was emphasized to the residents was this idea of repeating back. So let's say you went through the whole visit with the patient, told the plan to them, and you were getting ready to leave or wrap up. One of the things that is recommended is that you ask the patient to just sort of repeat back to you what the plan or what the diagnosis is. And more often than not, it's surprising how different the perspective or the take on the visit or the plan is from the patient and the provider standpoint. And just by asking that repeat back, I think what it does is it allows both parties to understand that there's still some room to understand each other.
I think something that's really interesting that Dr. Gottfried brought up is that there is still some room to understand each other. And that goes from the patient perspective and the doctor's perspective. Leah, something that you talked about earlier was how doctors have this extreme breadth of knowledge. But something that we don't consider is that patients walk in with their own breadth of knowledge.
That's so true.
Health is very much so an individualized condition. So while larger teachings of chemistry and biomedicine and everything are important and necessary, you need to understand how to funnel that knowledge to apply to a specific patient.
Doctors are limited to like when the patient decides to come into the space, but patients have all the experience before and afterwards, right? So although the diagnosis and like the treatment the doctor recommends will hopefully like help the patient, right? They're going to have to live with whatever the intricacies of their situation is past that. And like that's the type of knowledge that, like you said, is individual, but is also not necessarily something a doctor has access to, for lack of a better word.
Yeah, I totally agree. And something that I want to make very clear going off of your point is I really don't think in having spoken with doctors as well as patients, I don't think that it's the fault of the doctor. I don't think that it's the fault of the patient. I don't even think it's a fault with the healthcare system, which is very, very flawed.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a problem with how we understand health or how health works. And something that we really want to stress with patient autonomy is that the way that that happens is when there's a partnership, not like talking down paternalistic relationship between patient and doctor, but more like a meeting of minds and experience and knowledge between patient and doctor.
And something from our readings that really stuck out to me was Conglium's definition of health as patient autonomy, like the ability to adapt to your situation. That is huge. The ability to create a new normative. Instead of what is normal, you create the new normal for yourself. And that is something that is so important when we're thinking about health. Because when you live with your condition and whatever the treatment involves, it becomes the new normal for you. So what ways are you going to make that new normal like the most beneficial for yourself?
Like also a lot of the times when we talk about a state of health, and this is what I think Congleham is trying to like move against, we think about like the average as the ideal. And like Leah said, Congleham does a good job of saying like what is the best, what is the normal ought to be what's best for the patient individually for their situation. Health isn't just something relegated to the individual and the diagnosable conditions, right? Because even like the history of diagnosis itself is like fraught with contradictions and has evolved. And I think that by incorporating structures of like the environment, right, and one's relationship to it, we really get to the heart of like what a better and more pluralistic definition of health may be, which is not just based on the individual and not just based on diagnosis, but on their relationship, their access to care, you know, what cares might look like, whether they're medicinal or not. And yeah.
Dina, something that you're saying that I think is so interesting is health needs to be very patient-centered. There's the idea of colorblind in society, which is like a totally different conversation. But the one thing I'll pull from it is that we don't want to be like individual blind. The way that health works is that it manifests, sicknesses, everything manifests very differently for each person. And we don't want to go off of always recognizing a trend, because while trends are important, I don't mean to say that they're not. I think that we've developed beyond that point of just health, where like Leah, what you brought up, that it's the ability to adapt. And what's so amazing about that definition of health is that it is patient-centric.
Something real quick I wanted to add, just drawing from Dr. Arnold's experience, who's an ER physician, an ER pediatrician to be a little more specific, she talks about the mechanical ways she approaches being in the emergency room. When she looks at a patient, she's automatically looking for symptoms or what happened, the story, and she's creating a narrative of the illness, the accident, right? And when we're looking in a broader way, if we're thinking individual first, we have to look beyond just the illness. We have to look at the patient as a whole. And that's why, as a patient, coming forth with your different symptoms, what happened, journaling what's happening to you, how you feel, is incredibly beneficial to the doctor as they're making the initial evaluation of your illness and ways to treat it. Just coming in with a list of things that you're experiencing really helps them get on board with valuing your individual experience.
Right. And it takes a while to get to that point, right? It feels like, because like you assume that the doctor like knows more than you do about your body a lot of the time. And again, I don't know if that's just like a symptom of health culture or the fact that like, you know, doctors go to med school for years and years and you're just like, you probably know what's up with my body. But like at the end of the day, nobody really like knows exactly what it's like except for the patient, right? In a lot of the cases in which like the patient's symptoms manifest as like, for example, like pain, right? It's hard to like gauge that objectively or scientifically. And like this sort of transitions into my friend Bertha.
Prior to speaking with Leah and Kat, I, Dina, spoke to my friend Bertha, someone who struggles with a chronic condition, about her experience of finding and developing autonomy as a patient.
That I'm just so used to defending myself now with doctors that I was just like, no, like you have to look essentially at all the tests that were sent to you. And she just kept saying like, oh, well, you know, like I just don't give out diagnoses. Like I have to run my own tests. And I was like, I finally ended up asking like, have you seen the tests? And then like, essentially I wouldn't get off the telehealth screen until she looks at all the tests. And then she was like, oh crap, you definitely have Sjogren's. She's like, that's so rare. I can't believe you're so young and you have this. This doesn't make any sense, this blood work. She says, but I see it too. And she was actually like cross-checking like insurance information and like, you know, other things that were like in my file, but she just couldn't believe it. But the crazy thing was that she had such a sense of purpose of like, you don't have this, and that obviously you're here to see me because you Googled this and you wanted this.
It took her a while to get to the point where she was comfortable sort of like asking doctors about whether they'd like seen her file, for example. And you know, this is a process of years and years. Ruth has had like a chronic condition that, actually I'll just say it, she has Sjogren's, which isn't necessarily something that like young women of her age typically manifest. And there's always a lot of like pushback from doctors being like, we don't know if you actually have this, right? And yeah, this might be like specific to chronic conditions. I think the prevailing like notion of this like very intimate space that you're entering, where you sort of have to be willing to sort of like stand up for yourself, is something that I think everybody can take away from Bertha's experience. She has to like sort of talk to rheumatologists and be like, have you seen the evidence for me? Because there's a lot of, I don't want to say disbelief, but there's a lot of doubt, you know, just because like based on medical school alone, it's not necessarily what you've been taught to do. The gut instinct for doctors, like Leah was saying, is to be like, this is probably what it is, right? This is probably what you have. This is
textbook your experience.
Right. That's a very important lesson to take away from Bertha's experience. But also it does take time, you know, and that time might be like before the appointment being like, here's definitely what I want to get across. That might be like a buildup of appointments where you're
a great way to approach your appointment. That just segues into another point I wanted to bring up. Especially if you're having trouble or your illness prevents you from communicating your experience, having a loved one or someone stand by you and represent you in the room brings a lot of autonomy to you and your family or your support. An example of that would be like a mother and her child. If a child is taken in, the child isn't expected or maybe be unable to definitely express everything they're experiencing, but the mother understands the differences between normal and illness, right? So the mother is that segue, that link, so that the doctor is able to treat the individual. So sometimes if you're unable to speak up for yourself, if it's intimidating, whatever's happening, maybe confiding in a friend, a loved one, or a supportive member, and they can come with you into the doctor's office, support you throughout your time, and it can really help you generate some more self-autonomy.
Yeah, and I want to stress, it's not like this is like against the rules, right? Just because we don't do it. In fact, like a lot of doctors prefer that you talk to them and ask questions, which I think Kat can speak to.
Yeah, so I think that that's very true. And again, this like gap in where patients and doctors understand each other is definitely something that you guys have brought up. Tom Gillingham like describes kind of like a progression of health, that you build health. And this progression is really important. And Leah, something that you brought up and that you brought up a few times is like textbook. And we really want to get away from textbook, because rarely do people fall into a textbook other than like, I broke my foot, or like very obvious kind of like illnesses. Once we get beyond that, we're kind of in this vague gray area of that it's very specific to the person. So in terms of progression, something that I think could be very helpful to doctors and patients as well in bridging that gap is to understand that their symptoms are very important. Not just when they're in the doctor's office is it important to recognize and realize the importance of their symptoms. So kind of writing down what you feel at certain points, if your condition is worse at certain points, like when you're very stressed, or at night, or the presence of certain foods, because then that can deal with any host of issues. Oftentimes, once we get away from the obvious condition and we get to more chronic illnesses that affect more than just one part of the body, it's good to acknowledge the different, almost like interdisciplinary ideas that can go into what can affect your health.
Also, the body's all connected, right? So it's like not even like a question of like how we look at health, it's also a question of like, if something's wrong in one part of your body, something else in your body is going to try to maintain an equilibrium, you know?
So something that I've been thinking about during this conversation is the weird term of like bedside manner. And we think of bedside manner exclusively as like when a patient has cancer or some type of like fatal illness, and then the doctor like kind of attempting to like explain it or talk to them in such a way that telling them their diagnosis doesn't like break them in some way or cause like a huge emotional response. I think that idea is too often applied to like every form of health where they try to like obscure or like soften diagnosis, or just they don't want to speak to the patient as a partner, and they again kind of want to like hand down a diagnosis. When it comes to bedside manner, we need to kind of like develop that idea and that term where it can apply again on both sides of the medical office, where the patient can come in like willing to learn and understand, especially, which is definitely involved process, and I don't want to say that it's not, but also that the doctor comes in wanting to ensure that the patient understands. So with all of this being said about what we understand patient autonomy to be through both readings as well as like these different interviews, the thing that could be helpful is now if we discuss resources for patients to seek. A major resource offered to patients that can be very helpful is nurses. Oftentimes people don't understand nurses as a primary health resource because they see the doctor as the more important role.
Kind of like the nurse shines an empirical lantern on the patient generated from their own probably very similar experience, but also elevating the patient's experience to the doctor. Oftentimes the nurse comes in and listens to the patient first and then writes things down and gives it to the doctor. So nurse is a very valuable resource, especially if you're trying to express yourself, ask questions, ask for help, list your experiences.
A lot of patients are much more comfortable with nurses for the exact reasons that Leah just said.
And then another major resource that we wanted to include is the NIH website, which is
such a good resource. So good.
The NIH, the National Institute of Health, offers a lot of resources on their websites curtailed to patients specifically to help them bridge this gap in the doctor's office. It has how to go into your doctor's office with a plan, what questions you should ask, how to even make plans in reaching a doctor's office, because that can be a big burden for the patient already. And we have to understand that as a major experience that goes into once they're in the room. So the NIH can help kind of ease that transition of literally getting in the door and then what to say once you're there.
Just one last thing I wanted to bring up. A diagnosis is actually an incredibly powerful tool for generating self-autonomy. Even if a diagnosis gives you a path towards treatment that's very linear from the doctor's perspective, having the diagnosis means that you can take actionable steps outside of this institution of healthcare, whether it's Googling symptoms, joining support groups on Facebook or other platforms, or even having a more positive relationship with your disease or illness and that connotation that it describes. Just a key point from this podcast, doctors have an understanding of the biomedical aspects of health, but patients also have an equally important and necessary knowledge of themselves, their bodies, their symptoms, and their experience.